By March of 2007, I had already gotten to the place where for 3 months, every single day, I saw my career as an insurance agent. Every minute in that office was a distraction from what I felt I was most put on this earth to do. And I despised it and I hated it. And one day I came home and I was so frustrated. And my wife says, she goes, "That's it." And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Tomorrow morning, you're going to go in and tell your dad that you're leaving the insurance office." And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Listen, you and I both know that this is what we're called to do." Now, Furkan, what I haven't shared in this episode, which you would hear in great detail in episode 493 of Podcast Answer Man, but when I say that I started podcasting as a hobby, I started podcasting with my wife as a hobby. Our first podcast was the Lost podcast devoted to the TV show Lost. And we podcasted twice a week, every week for 5 years.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. This week's episode, I sit down with Cliff Ravenscraft, who's widely recognized as one of the pioneers of podcasting and online business coaching. Cliff shares his journey from leaving his family's successful insurance business to building a life centered around purpose, contribution, and personal growth. We explore meditation, emotional awareness, identity, entrepreneurship, resilience, mastermind groups, and the inner stories that shape our lives. Cliff opens up about the emotional roller coaster of his early entrepreneurial years, nearly dying after pushing himself to exhaustion, and how those experiences ultimately transformed the way he views suffering, success, and meaning. Cliff Ravenscraft started podcasting as a hobby in 2005, and it completely transformed his life. In 2008, he walked away from a successful career in his family's insurance agency to pursue a deeper calling through podcasting, coaching, and online business education. Over the years, Cliff became recognized as one of the world's leading authorities on podcasting, helping more than 40,000 people launch podcasts and build meaningful businesses around their message. As his work has evolved, Cliff shifted beyond podcast strategy into mindset, business development, and personal transformation, helping entrepreneurs create business aligned with purpose, clarity, and fulfillment. Please check out all the ways you can find Cliff's work online, including his podcast, Podcast Answer Man, which can be found on all platforms. And before we jump into the episode, a quick reminder that listening to this podcast does not establish a therapeutic relationship. This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and is not affiliated with my therapeutic work. If you do seek support, please reach out to a licensed clinician. Now let's just jump into the episode. Cliff, welcome to Easy Conversations. Thank you for joining me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation, and it's very rare I meet someone with a nice beard.
Thank you.
Mostly I'm the one on the receiving end of the compliment, so I wanted to extend it to you. You got a pretty good full beard. But yeah.
I appreciate that. I just told my wife this week, I said, I feel like I have finally chosen to adopt the identity that I am a bearded man, because I am 54 years old, I think. And the only reason I say I think is because I really don't pay that much attention during my birthday, how old I really am. But anyway, I'm pretty sure I'm 54 years old. And for the first 53 and a half years, I never had a beard. And I went to a conference in January of 2026. So just a few months ago. And matter of fact, that's where I met you.
Yes. Yes.
And everybody is like, "Oh my gosh, what an incredible beard you have." And the funny thing is, Furkan, is that every single person who said that, I had forgotten since the last person who said it, that I even had a beard.
There you go. Yeah. Sounds like you're owning it finally, right?
The question had been, am I going to keep it? Am I going to keep it? Am I going to keep it? And the answer now is I'm keeping this.
Awesome. Yeah, it would be a tragedy if you got rid of that beard. But amongst all things, yeah. So that conference, a Podfest to be specific, where you and I connected, I did follow up with you after the fact. And one of the things I did mention was your demeanor and just the way you show up, something resonated for me. And the more we have spoken since then, that's been validated that you're, despite what I would say all the success, which we will get into, you present yourself as a down-to-earth person and very grounded. And I am curious, what keeps you so grounded? What are the things you do? I'm always curious to hear what practices people have or what are the reminders they have for themselves to stay on whatever path they've chosen for themselves.
Yeah, I love that question. One of my number one practices is meditation. And I know this might be for audio for some, but I am 1,512 consecutive days of meditation. And I meditate early in the morning when I wake up, usually between 4 and 4:30 in the morning. And before I think about who I am as a human, as an ego, as a persona, before I enter into what is on my calendar, what are all my commitments and all that, I love to just sit and be present in my body and just experience the fact that, wow, I'm alive and I'm here. And that just grounds me. And then I come out of that time and I do a lot of reflection. I'm very intentional about recording my activities, my thoughts, and my emotional states as I go throughout my day. One of the things that I've recently done is I have one of the, it's called the Plodnote Pro, and it sticks on the back of my phone. And I record little random updates all throughout the day of here's, I just did this. It's this time of day. I'm noticing that I'm feeling this and whatever. And I just let that, those record. And then at the end of the day, I merge them all together. They get transcribed. And then I take it into a very custom ChatGPT that allows me to do a lot of personal self-reflection. So a lot of meta reflection, a lot of meta self-coaching of who am I? What are my patterns? What am I noticing? What am I observing? And just going through that and a lot of self-reflection. And then asking myself, what do I want to create next? So yeah, those are the practices that keep me grounded.
Awesome. That's really cool. And the fact you've been doing it, I would say 5 years consecutively, that's pretty
cool. The meditation has been consecutive. The daily logging of the things that I've done that sporadically over the years with various different apps and tools and trying to log it. But boy, with this little tiny device with on the MagSafe wallet onto the back of my phone, it's with me everywhere. It is a total game changer because it's one press of the button. I say what time of day it is, and I just start speaking for as little as 7 seconds to as much as 17 minutes of what's going on in my mind. And then I hit stop. And what I love about it, Furkan, is I can just, whatever it is, no longer just sticks in my head as I'm going to my next thing. I'm able to say, you know what, that's been documented. And at some point, if it's necessary, it will surface up. And also, I do have inside of, because it's Plaud, P-L-A-U-D that I use, I have an incredibly in-depth, super mega awesome prompt that combs through that transcript and surfaces some really powerful things. And so what I love is that at any point in my day, I might have something. And in the old days, it would have just, I would have ruminated on that. It'd be in the background of my mind. I'd go into an interview and maybe not so much in an interview, but there are some conversations I'll go into and it's still in the back of my head. I can't forget this. I need to do something with it. Whereas I feel like, man, I've put it here. I let it go. And I know because tomorrow morning I will review today's log, whatever it was, if it's important, it will surface to the top.
Yeah, that's amazing. And how do you hold yourself accountable to stick with the meditation? For example, especially when you're traveling, going to conferences. I was just at a conference last weekend and I wasn't able to keep up with the things. Time difference, you're not sleeping in your bed, you've got things going on all day, you're out of your routine. And I find, like, at times in those situations, I end up losing some of the things that I know I need to keep myself grounded, and then I pay for it. But yeah, how do you hold yourself accountable?
Well, a lot of it is journaling and logging my experiences. Yes. One of the things I told you I do is I evaluate my emotional states throughout the day, and kind of the inner dialogue, the inner narrative that sometimes my ego persona is. I don't know if you've ever had an experience when all of a sudden something happens that you weren't expected. I call them inconvenient, unexpected, undesirable situations. I don't know about you, but sometimes those show up in my life. And that inner dialogue oftentimes either tells me a very positive story about what could be possible from this, or it could tell me a doomsday of all the things that are going to go bad. And oftentimes, which of those stories I start to spin is determined upon the emotional state that I am when I was hit with the unexpected information. And over time, I just became very, I studied this long enough, my own experiences through my daily life, where I recognize, wow, if I meditate, I have better experiences of life overall. That's not to say that unexpected, undesirable, and inconvenient things don't come my way. They still do. And and that's not to say that I don't have emotional triggers. I still do. But one of the things that I learned is, wow, if all of a sudden I become aware that I'm in a fairly deep funk about something, it's very quick today that I become aware that it's there. And then I step back and say, could meditation be a benefit to me right now? And the answer to that question is, has always been yes. There's never been a, and another thing that's been very helpful for me, Furqan, is I have come to the place for myself where I could, and I'm going to say with hyperbole here,
yes,
that I could probably think of maybe 50 to 100 different forms of meditation. So for example, I believe it's entirely possible for me to be in a state of meditation in conversation with you. And what I mean by that is I could see meditation as nothing more than an intense conscious focus on the moment. And so right now I am literally looking at your eyes and I'm, you know what, there's Furqan, and behind those eyes is the entire universe of consciousness perceiving me and the world and from a different perspective. And I'm living this moment, engaging in this, and this is, and it just brings me to this moment right here where there's nothing else that really exists other than my intense focus. And what I learned is, if it's usually, if I'm suffering some sort of negative story or some kind of emotional state, it's because I'm focused on some narrative over there about the situation. But if I take all of my focus and meditate it on you and your eyes in this conversation, and I bring myself to this present moment, now all of a sudden I'm not feeling all of that stuff. And it's not to say that I want to repress or suppress feelings. It's just that in the moment, I'm right here. And when, so when you talk about going to meditating, what one, another form of meditating, I'm going to go to a conference at Social Media Marketing World here in about 2 weeks, and I'll be walking up and down the hallway in Anaheim. But I'm also going to take some time to walk from my hotel room to the conference center. And there's always going to be some period of time when I'm walking down a hallway or a corridor, and I have the option. I could be in my head thinking about all of the things that are on my mind, the things that I want to do, the place I'm going to go, or I could put earbuds in and I could listen to a podcast. I could do all those things. Or if I want to, I could be, I could choose to stay present in the moment and say, you know what? I am intentionally observing the feeling of my feet as each footstep touches the ground, and that I'm supported by the earth underneath me, and just be in this moment. And I could do that for 2 or 3 or 4 minutes as I'm walking down a hallway by myself. And as far as I'm concerned, that is a form of meditation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I love it. It's simple, but profound, right? And I think we tend to complicate things and talk ourselves out of doing things. So
yeah,
I love it. I'm definitely going to keep that in mind next time I'm traveling, that it doesn't have to be over the top, or it doesn't have to be exactly the way I am used to doing things? How can I get creative and perhaps take a different approach, but have the same result?
Yeah, I there's nothing that really replaces the sitting down for 15, 20 minutes of pure, uninterrupted, blissful meditation. But there's something profound in the middle of a busy day to just take 90 seconds and just be focused on the sensation of the breath coming in and out of my body as well.
Yeah. And one of the things you touched on that you will meditate on is, who are you as a human? Who are you as a human? We didn't get into that, so.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Gosh, there's so many fun different ways. Who am I as a human? My name's Cliff Ravenscraft. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm an online business owner. I'm a content creator, podcaster. I started podcasting as a hobby in 2005. Since then, I have produced over 55 different shows, podcast shows, over 5,000 podcast episodes. I developed a huge following in the early days. A lot of it was just very much being at the right place at the right time. By my third episode of my very first ever podcast, we had 27,000 subscribers, and that grew quickly to tens of thousands, like 60,000, 100,000. And the people started saying, Cliff, how can I do what you're doing? And I'm like, let me show you. And that turned into something that was in creating a side income for me, to eventually to the place where eventually it was an all-consuming passion of mine. And it turned into a full-time career when I decided to leave my day job. I know you'll come in and ask me some of the details about that. I have been full-time self-employed since January 2008. It was a very difficult first year. We can go into some of that. But eventually things turned around, and I ended up earning more money over the last several years than I could have ever dreamed of when I first started. And I've had lots of ups and downs along the way, but I've most recently had a whole lot more ups, in spite of what used to be, I would have been considered downs, but I don't really experience them as much as downs today. So, but who am I today? Online business owner, a guy who is a business strategy and mindset coach, and I just love to serve and help people anywhere I can.
Yeah, I love it. And why is it important for you to serve?
I think it has to do, if you've ever heard of the six human needs philosophy from Tony Robbins, he talks about the fact that we all have the four human needs of the personality, which is, we all want a level of certainty. We also need a certain level of uncertainty or a variety in our life. Otherwise, it gets a little too boring. There is a desire for connection and or love in our life. And there's also the desire for significance. And by the way, I used to be very heavy on the certainty and significance side of the equation. Those were the two drivers of my life. But then he talked about the two spiritual needs that are of the six human needs, and that is growth and contribution. And so I am today, and I think I always have been, but today it is what drives my life. I am consistently drawn to this idea of personal growth at all times. And the so growth, and then there's contribution. And contribution, giving to others, serving others, it just lights me up. I just love the way it makes me feel, knowing that I've done something to provide value to other people's lives. And so much of it is because I know how many people have contributed to my growth, to help me get beyond some of my previous limitations. And so the way that I have been served, I just have such a desire to do that for others. I also, Furkan, grew up in a very evangelical, fundamentalist, Christian background as a child. And I even got to the place where when I was 18 years old, I thought that my future would be that I'd be a full-time pastor devoted to ministry in that capacity. And then I spent 10 years as an associate pastor in the Christian church. And my experience has broadened beyond that scope these days. But I will tell you that I'm still very much drawn to the teachings of Jesus and living out so many of the principles that have been a part of my values for my entire life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and well, I appreciate that additional context because it does give a sense of how you find orientation in your life, right? And again, it goes back to how you find that sense of grounding in your life as well. The other thing you touched on was the downs are something that you don't necessarily look as downs anymore. So with the ups and downs, so from your perspective, where has the shift happened and how do you reframe those experiences?
So what I will share with you is as you're a therapist, as I know,
yes,
and I'm sure you've heard many people espouse this principle or philosophy, and that is we don't experience life. We experience our interpretation of life. And so when I say I don't really experience downs today as much as I used to, it has a lot to do with the fact that I have a lot more intentional control, or at least initially more observation. I still get triggered into some old patterns of thinking and perceiving. I still have a lot of beliefs that I had picked up along my path through life that I'm still unconscious of. And occasionally I'll walk across something that triggers one of those beliefs and boom, I've got some feelings. And so the thing is that I just got to the place where I began to understand that my suffering or my experiencing this as such a significant down moment in my life has so much to do with the way that I'm narrating in my head what this situation means. And let me share with you some struggles that I had in the early days. So when I first started my own business, I struggled financially in the first year, not because I needed to, but because I put myself through it. And the reason why is because I had people who wanted to pay me left and right, but there were certain people I refused to send invoices to because I didn't feel like I had earned the money. I had all sorts of beliefs that you really don't get paid for your hobbies. Nobody should get paid for their hobbies. You get paid for hard work. It's what's called the Protestant work ethic. And the harder you work, the more difficult things are, the more you should get paid. Certainly, nobody ever taught me the opposite of that. But in my mind, if that's true, which by the way, in my belief systems at the time, the more difficult a job is, the more you hate what you do, the more you should get paid to do it. I fully believed that. The only problem is I left a career as an insurance agent, which I didn't love. And now all of a sudden I'm full-time self-employed doing something that I don't feel like I ever work. I was putting in 12 to 14, sometimes as many as 18 hours a day in time, effort, energy, and work. But none of it felt like work. It felt like play. And because it felt like play, I felt like what I'm doing isn't worthy of income, especially all of the people I know. And remember, in 2008 is when I started my business. 2008 is when the big, huge housing market crash and the big economy and people are being laid off left and right. And here I was, a guy who had guaranteed job security. My grandfather started an insurance agency in 1937. My mom and dad took it over from him. And I worked for my mom and dad. You talk about job security. Nobody had more job security than this guy. And I had already been an insurance agent for 12 years, and the paperwork is already drawn. My dad's going to retire in a few years, and I'm next in line to take it over. And we're talking guaranteed multiple millions of dollars a year in personal income. And I walked away from that to go pursue what? My hobby? This podcasting, talking into a microphone? And this is, by the way, before anybody knew that you could make money from podcasting. Matter of fact, if you looked at all the articles right around the time frame about podcasting, you would have seen a growing trend of people saying that podcasting is dead. Mm. Podcasting has it's flattened, it's plateaued. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, guys, you have no clue. It hasn't even gotten started yet. But anyway, I had so much faith that I made the right decision, but I also had to deal with all the facts that by the end of the year, after paying all of my business expenses, paying health insurance for our family, for self-employment, health insurance rates, and all this other stuff, at the end of the year, I only made $11,000 net income. That's all I brought home after taxes.
Wow.
And that was a lot less money than I was used to making.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, my wife was a stay-at-home mom, and we had three very young children. And it was a challenge to even put food on the table. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk about experiencing downs back then, I was experiencing downs. You talk about, I had anxiety and fear and guilt and shame. What am I doing? What am I putting my family through? And that's every time something went wrong. For example, right after I went full time, I had a $2,000 to $3,000 a month income stream vanish overnight because of the economy. Mm. They lost all of their VC. They didn't get their next round of VC funding. And overnight, that income was gone. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that was like most of my income. Mm. And it's gone overnight. How do I replace this? And so that was an undesirable, unexpected, inconvenient situation. Now, those three words, I've used them multiple different times in this conversation. That's called transformational language. I intentionally use those words to describe that event today, but I'm going to tell you right now, I did not consider that to be an inconvenient situation.
Mm-hmm.
No, back in the day, it's, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing. This mm-hmm. couldn't have happened at a worse time. Man, I, you know what? Maybe I made a huge mistake. Who am I to do this? I feel like such an idiot. I should have seen this. I should have planned better. I should have this. I should have done this. Mm. And so I just really struggled a lot with beating myself up and feeling guilty and feeling ashamed about doing this thing that makes me happy.
Mm. Mm.
And at the same time, I know that I'm on the right path. Mm. And so I had all of this conflicting emotions inside of me. And so I was just an emotional roller coaster the entire year of 2008. And it was so bad that I worked 12 to 14 hours a day, 7 days a week for 9 months without a single day off. And during those 9 months, I never drew a single paycheck from my business. We lived off of my income from my insurance, my final year in insurance. We lived off of an emergency fund. We lived off of all sorts of ways to try to cover the bills. But the business made the business made money, but not enough to pay me a paycheck for the ninth. And then after 9 months for Con, I said, you know what? I got to take a day off. Mm-hmm. So finally, I decided to take Sundays off, but I had to go to my boss and get permission. Mm-hmm. And my boss said, Cliff, I'll give you permission to take Sunday off, but only if you agree to work another 4 hours a day the other 6 days of the week. By the way, my boss was me, if you didn't pick that up.
Yeah.
So in essence, I started working about 18 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
6 days a week. And those final 3 months, I finally was bringing home some money. Mm-hmm. There was a paycheck.
Yes.
After taxes, $11,000. And to celebrate my first year in business, my text account, and he says, Cliff, congratulations. Most businesses are not profitable in their first year. You were. I said, yeah, it was technically on paper, the business is profitable, but only because it gave up its number one expense, which is employment revenue, paying your employees.
Yes.
But anyway, he says, congratulations. To celebrate my first year in business, I did a 24-hour nonstop podcast marathon where I recorded 24 one-hour podcast episodes in 24 hours, publishing the hours before while I was doing the current hour. I had co-hosts for a bunch of shows. And so I was able to process in the background the last hours. I wrapped up that 24-hour nonstop marathon and I went upstairs and I said, Stephanie, can you take me to the hospital?
Mm.
And I felt like somebody had stabbed me with a pickaxe. And it went through my gut all the way into my back. And it's like, I cannot sit in any way that's comfortable. And so I went, ended up going to the emergency room. Turns out that I had massive gallstones in my gallbladder, and I had one stuck in my cystic duct.
Oh, geez.
Through a whole crazy series of events, I ended up staying there for 2 weeks in the hospital, and I almost died because of a mistake that they made. And that's when I'm like, okay, something's got to change here. And that's what began that. It was that experience of almost dying in the hospital and recognizing that it's my belief system. It was my mindset that was causing all of that emotional turmoil that forced me to feel like I had to work so much that I was unworthy of wealth or income doing work that I love. I got out of the hospital and I said, you know what? I either need to go back and get my career as an insurance agent back, which wasn't on the table for me personally, or I need to figure out a better way to do business. And that's what started my personal development journey.
Wow, that's powerful. And I would assume going through all those experiences also allowed for you to shift your perspective on the downs, right? Going through something like that, I think as difficult as it may be in the moment, it just gives you insight into whatever situations arise subjectively, it's not that bad. Or the one thing I've been able to connect to is I've been able to get through difficult situations. I have that resilience. I can get through this as well. And as much as it may seem like an inconvenience right now, it's going to be okay.
I definitely have developed a lot of resiliency over the years because I can experience something today that would have, I'm going to use this language, that would have destroyed me in 2008. And I can say, huh, that's interesting, and just move on. It's like, that is not a perfect example of this was, I'll never forget, there was this one time I had been working on putting some digital tutorials together. I had worked on a massive email campaign to my mailing list, and I'm ready to pull the trigger. I had worked around the clock on this. It's okay, everything's riding on this. And as soon as this goes live, I'm definitely going to get a return on my investment of the time, effort, and energy. But man, this has to go and it has to be perfect. And I really nailed this thing. And then I hit send and the email went out to my entire mailing list. And then all of a sudden my email just blew up. Cliff, I'm trying to click the link, but your website says unavailable. It says database error or something like that. And I'm like, what? And so I contact my web server and I'm like, and I'm telling you, if you know about cortisol and stress, I am in fight or flight mode. My bloodstream is sending all of its life force into my extremities to fight this danger that's literally put me on the verge of death here. And so I just fought. And I'm like, what do you mean? And I was so angry that they could let my site go down. And why aren't you, get me somebody more important. I need to talk to somebody who is going to take care of this right now. Oh my gosh. And that inner narrative is, oh man. And there's so many people who would have purchased it and it's going to slip their mind and they're not going to purchase it. And I'm losing all of my income. All of this is for nothing and blah, blah, blah. And I got to tell you, if the same thing were to happen today, I'm like, well, that's interesting. Let's go to lunch. I would say to my wife, let's go to lunch. Let's go and enjoy the afternoon and see if when I get back, it's not fixed itself. And then what I'll do is I'll say, okay, based upon all of this, I can create a series of emails that will explain, hey, I recognize that my site was down immediately upon setting this. I've looked into it. Everything's back up and running. And by the way, I'm extending this sale for 2 days. This is no big deal. And so that's what I think you were talking about is the fact that it's like going through those under things, recognizing my worst fears did not come true. And even the things that my mind was saying, this might go wrong. Even those things that did occur still weren't nearly as bad as I let them out to be.
Right.
And the number one thing I will say for Khan is I've been interviewed countless times and they ask me this question a lot And that is, if you could go back and talk to yourself back at the beginning of 2008, what would you tell yourself? And I said, I hope I'm never given the opportunity to do that. And the reason why is because I would want myself to go through every single heartache and pain and trial and everything that I did, because who I am today is because of what I learned through all of that. And while I wouldn't wish much of it on my worst enemy, I would never want it taken away from my experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you for even looking back in my life, 100%. And we're talking about experiencing those things and realizing that the worst case scenario, even if it were to happen, we're going to be okay. So there's that experience, but how much of it also comes with age and wisdom that at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, does it really matter?
Yeah, I love that question. And I would love to say, I wish there was an age that somebody reaches and then all of a sudden they come to that realization. And unfortunately, I know some people who are advanced in their age and haven't yet come to that realization. And then I actually have come across some people that are rather young who have come to that realization. But I definitely get what you're saying. And there is, for me, I call that my spiritual awakening. It's, wait a second, my life is not about this story that I'm telling myself. Who am I? When you ask that question, I love how you phrase this. Who are you from an ego identity? From my ego psychological makeup, this is who I am. Everything in my world changed when I realized that Cliff Ravenscraft, the business owner, the guy who does these things, that's not who I am. But yet at the same time, who I am is very much invested in that, in playing that role. And I see it as important, but it's not who I am. And if that actually goes away, it's okay, because who I am truly can develop a new identity based upon what I have to work with. The reason when this happened for me, Furkan, was during the pandemic, because I had developed a pretty healthy ego. And when I say a pretty healthy ego, I'm talking about an ego that could withstand a lot. And when I say that, a pretty arrogant ego that was full of himself. And it was growing and growing. And because I had been through so much, I had all the scars, I made it through it. And then all of a sudden I came out of the hospital and I went and did this. And sure, I had some trials and errors, but I kept growing and I kept growing. I piled one success on top of another success and it kept growing. Mm-hmm. And boy, I got to the place where it's like, oh man, I feel like I'm unstoppable. And I think everybody can be unstoppable. And let me tell you how you can also be unstoppable. And I even went so far as to say, you know what, I'm gonna develop a annual conference called Free the Dream, which I did. And I'm like, I'm gonna work out 6 days a week, every week for the rest of my life, and I'm gonna show you how you can do it too. And I'm like, I adopted all of this as my ego identity. I'm a guy who now speaks on stages in front of thousands of people at a time. I'm a guy who creates content every single day, inspiring and motivating people. I'm the guy who goes to the gym and I work out 1 to 3 hours a day, 7 days a week, because I can and because this is who I am. And boy, that got lots of attention. There were plenty of people who loved to follow that ego. But what happened was when they did, do you remember the phrase 2 weeks to slow the spread?
No.
So when COVID happened, they shut everything down.
Oh, and yes,
initially
yes.
Said, we're going to close things down for just 2 weeks.
Right.
That's it. At the time, from November 2014 through when they closed things down at the pandemic, for 6 to 7 days a week, every day of my life, I spent 1 to 3 hours a day at the gym. That was my ego. That was my identity. I'm a guy who speaks at 9 to 10 conferences a year, and I host my own annual conference. That's my identity. This is who I am. This is how I provide value to the world. And then all of a sudden, in a heartbeat, It's gone. Mm. I'm no longer a guy who goes to the gym. I'm no longer a guy who speaks on stages. And then all of a sudden, the most important question one could ever ask themselves, if I'm not that, who am I?
Yeah, that's definitely powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when all of a sudden, all of the personal development books that I've read and all this other stuff, and I'm like, man, I see it all. And you know what? And I don't regret, and I don't really judge myself for so much of the path that, and there's still parts of that I'd like to readopt in a more nuanced fashion, in a less arrogant fashion and stuff like that. There's still so much value to that path that I was on.
Mm.
But the problem was, is that I was fully convinced at the time that is who I am. That is me.
Mm.
And to realize that it wasn't me, it was just it was a story I was telling myself about me.
Yeah.
One of the most powerful phrases or quotes that I recently heard back in 2014 for the very first time. I love this for Khan. It says this: the most important story you will ever hear is the story you tell yourself about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I relate to a lot of the stuff you're sharing because I often will get high on the things I'm doing and accomplishing and the pace I'm going at. Same thing, working out almost every day, keeping up with all my deliverables while still being a father and a husband. And then the rug gets pulled out from underneath me, right? Either
yep.
I get sick, I burn myself out, something out of the blue comes up that I wasn't expecting. And those are moments that I feel are reminders from the universe or however you want to believe what's going on behind the scenes, the forces at bay, but it's just a little wink that, hey, stay humble. But yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. There's something else you shared around when you made that choice to invest in yourself, your business, right? And you said you knew you were on the right path. How did you know that?
Again, this was back in the day when I had very much had the language of feeling like, okay, God is calling me.
Mm.
So from the time I told you, from the time I was 18 years old, I felt from within, man, I feel God has called me to serve people.
Mm.
And for Khan, what I will tell you is I have always had a desire to show up and be an encouragement in people's lives. And I told you that I was an insurance agent for 12 years, but during those 12 years, 10 of them, I was also an associate pastor.
Mm-hmm.
During those years, I would lead small groups of young adults in Bible study, if you will.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden I got to the place where those would multiply and I would be the leader and I would be the leader of leaders of groups. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately I've got this amazing group of people that I'm serving. Eventually I realized, wow, you know what? There's a lot of service to be had as an insurance agent. Oftentimes as an insurance agent, I'm on the front lines and sometimes I'm the first person or among the first people that somebody calls when their daughter was just killed in a car accident or a husband had just committed suicide or something of that nature, because I sold auto, home, life, health, and business insurance. And so I eventually got to the place where, you know what? I'm doing good work inside of the ministry, inside of the institution. But I truly see, and I saw for a while, my greatest impact in the world was actually as an insurance agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is my full-time ministry, until I started podcasting. Now, are some people going to see the video of this?
Yes, it'll okay. be on YouTube, yeah.
So I'm going to hold this up. I imagine you see this, right?
Yes, yeah.
This is, and for those in audio, I'm going to tell you, I'm holding a big, huge wooden box. It's about five inches high, and then it's the dimensions of an 8.5 by 11. It's a physical inbox. And inside this are hundreds of thank you cards, greeting cards, postcards, and handwritten letters from all over the world. This is just the handwritten stuff that has been mailed physically to our PO box. And Inside of that, there are three letters from people who said they chose not to commit suicide as a result of something I said in a podcast. There's a letter in there from a man who had left his wife and his kids to go pursue a different relationship and wrote back and said, because of something that you said in a podcast, my kids now have a dad in their life again. Yeah, I don't think my wife will ever forgive me. I don't know, but at least my kids will know their dad. And that's because of something you said in a podcast. And again, though, those messages in that box are just messages that came in over the course of 18 months where I one time gave people my P.O. box. That's it. And that has nothing to say for the thousands upon thousands of emails that have come in over the years. And so for Khan, when I say I feel like this is my calling in the world, there is, man, being an insurance agent is a distraction from the fact that I'm talking into this microphone and tens of thousands of people are impacted in this way. And I'm like, so for 18 months, I dreamed every day, what would life be like if I could do this for a living instead of selling insurance? And even what would it be like if my ministry were this instead of being an associate pastor in the institution? And so eventually I left both of those behind and pursued this. That's about the time that I became full-time self-employed. And after the first year, sure, I went through all sorts of stuff. Most of it, my own limiting beliefs and my own lack of emotional intelligence and all the stuff. But still, what I recognize is that in spite of all of that, what came in as far as the people's testimony as to the impact of what I was doing behind this microphone. And then when it came to the clients that I worked with and the impact and influence that they're having with people, I'm like, yeah, there's no way I could go back to selling insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, what I'm telling you is, sure, I only made $11,000 personal income last year, but there's no way I'm going to go back to that career that is guaranteed that would generate several million dollars a year in personal income. There's no way I could do that.
Yeah. I think, again, relating to what you're sharing, when I left my corporate job, even now, I've been out of it now for a year and a half almost. And there are times where the doubt creeps in or I question myself. And as I've already mentioned, there's these subtle winks I receive. And every now and then when I'm questioning it, I'll get some sort of reinforcement, whether it's a client telling me that, hey, thank you for helping me through this, or something popping up. And it's just a reminder that I'm on the right path. So I definitely get what you're putting out there in terms of how you knew and how you continue to know that you're on that right path. But sometimes we also need people in our lives. And I don't think I would be here today if it wasn't for the unconditional support of my wife and her encouragement. And she's played a huge role. I know there's times where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And she would just encourage me to choose the path that made me happy. And she took all that pressure off that we'll figure it out together. How was it for you and the role that your wife played?
If you don't mind me plugging an episode of one of my podcasts, episode number 493 of Podcast Answer Man, which you can find at podcastanswerman.com/493. I was recently interviewed in a podcast with my wife. So the two of us together being interviewed. And I loved it because she does not get enough airtime for the vital role that she played. Yeah. So one of the parts of this story was, here I am 18 months into my podcasting journey as a hobby. We're not full-time self-employed yet. I'm working 20 to 30 hours a week in podcasting. I'm working 40 hours a week in insurance. And we're having all of this impact and influence. We're bringing in income. And I'm having all of these conversations with people telling me, Cliff, you should just go for it. You should just go for it. It's clear that, man, you were made for this. And I would come home and I would tell my wife all of those things. But of course, I have this belief that's not a responsible thing that a husband and father does. a husband and father doesn't go pursue his hobby as a career, doesn't walk away from this level of income. Sure, it's nice that I'm making $3,000 to $5,000 a month, but that doesn't pay all of the bills. What I will share is there was a season where I thought my insurance career was my ministry. And at that time, I loved it. But by 18 months of seeing the impact that I was having behind the microphone, at that point, I had on this date, whatever date this was, it would have been March of 2007. By March of 2007, I had already gotten to the place where for 3 months, every single day, I saw my career as an insurance agent. Every minute in that office was a distraction from what I felt I was most put on this earth to do. And I despised it and I hated it. And one day I came home and I was so frustrated. And my wife says, she goes, "That's it." And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Tomorrow morning, you're going to go in and tell your dad that you're leaving the insurance office." And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Listen, you and I both know that this is what we're called to do." Now, Furkan, what I haven't shared in this episode, which you would hear in great detail in episode 493 of Podcast Answer Man, but when I say that I started podcasting as a hobby, I started podcasting with my wife as a hobby. Our first podcast was the Lost podcast devoted to the TV show Lost. And we podcasted twice a week, every week for 5 years, from all the way after season one, all the way to the end of season six. We also did a bunch of other entertainment shows. We've done family shows. We've done all sorts of things together. So by this time, those physical letters aren't just about me and my impact. It's what we were doing together. And so Stephanie said to me, she goes, "We both know that this is what we're called to do in the world." And she goes, "Listen, you're already earning this amount of money. What if you took your most productive 40 hours a week and devoted it to this? Just imagine what we could accomplish then." And she goes, "If it comes down to it," now again, my wife now is the mother of three very young kids, and she's been a stay-at-home mom since our oldest child came into the picture. And here's the next phrase. She says, "If we have to sell our house, then we'll sell our house. If I have to go out and get a job for a while, I'll go out and get a job. But tomorrow morning, you're putting in your notice."
Yeah.
That's the level of support I had from my wife.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can definitely. That was exactly the conversation we had. She said, "If we have to sell the house, we'll figure it out." And that just took all that pressure off of me too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I tell you, there were times the funny thing is, though, we had been introduced to Dave Ramsey several years before that. And because I had a very successful career as an insurance agent, we went from tens of thousands. We were like, I think we were probably nearly $80,000 in debt in our a couple years prior to this. But it was actually July of the year before that we became full-time, fully debt-free, except for our mortgage. So the only debt we had when I left my career as an insurance agent, the only debt was a mortgage payment. And we picked up a podcast sponsor for $800 a month for just one of our podcasts. It was one episode a week, $800 a month. And it just so happens to be that our mortgage payment was $800 a month.
Wow.
So it's, wow, that's incredible. But yeah, it was an incredible journey with
my wife. You're making a lot of people jealous about that mortgage payment that are listening
now. Oh yeah.
Fair enough. So just to shift gears quickly here, I do want to get your focus on the mastermind work that you do and your buddy Pat Flynn, who was the keynote speaker at PodFest this year as well.
Yep.
So yeah, tell us about why that's such an important part of your life now.
Yeah, so I had a mastermind group in my life before I knew what the mastermind principle was. So remember I told you when I started my business in 2008, when I started, I actually surrounded myself. I created an advisory board for myself, not anything official that was required. I just wanted 10 people that I knew who believed in my journey. And I actually put, these are people I knew from church, and these are people who I knew who were professionals who thought about business probably in a much more clear way than I did. And so I basically put them all in a Google group and said, hey guys, here's what's going on in my world and I'd love your feedback. And they all agreed to this. Ironically, I will share something for Khan. If you have the time, I would just tell you there is this one point where somebody had suggested that we apply for food stamps to put some food on the table. Mm. And I went to this group. I said, guys, I'm going to tell you something. I already feel a tremendous amount of guilt and shame about the fact that I'm struggling to bring enough income to put food on the table. And somebody suggested I do this. I think it's a terrible idea. And my upbringing tells me that this is the most irresponsible thing, but I'm eager for your feedback.
Mm.
Furkan, the first person who responded immediately said, and by the way, all of the feedback from this group, I didn't call them a mastermind group at the time, but all the feedback from this group at the time was super positive, super supportive, super encouraging. But this one occasion, and it was right around 6 months into the full-time self-employment journey, this one occasion, I sent that message and this one guy says, okay, I'm out. I can't do this anymore, Cliff. I support you all the way up until this. It's very clear that you are being irresponsible, that you've made a decision that has no future. Mm. If you're at the place where you need to go live off of government assistance, it's time to call it quits and go get the job back at the insurance agency. And that was the first message that came back in this Google group. And I don't know if you know what Google groups are, but it's an email where everybody gets the original email, but everybody also gets every reply to every email in the group. So I get this message and it pretty much confirms all of the inner narrative. I'm like, oh man, I'm a failure. Yeah, he's right. Blah, 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 blah. Thankfully, within 20 minutes, a second person chimes in. He says, okay, Cliff, I'm going to tell you to do two things. Hear me clearly. The first thing you do is remove that jerk from this group and never seek his advice again.
Mm.
Do that first. The second thing you need to do is go apply for food stamps and put some food on your family's table.
Mm.
Those systems were created for people in your situation. He says, I'm going to tell you right now, I've been in business. I know what it takes to succeed. You have everything it takes to succeed. What you're going through is not out of the norm. This is very standard. People go through this. These systems exist to help people like you. And I'm going to tell you this right now.
Mm.
Print this message out. You will one day pay in taxes in one paycheck more than you will ever receive from this assistance program. Go get those food stamps. But first, remove that guy from this group or I'm leaving. And then all the other people said what he said.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that is, by the way, that is the mastermind principle in action. Now, remember I told you I got out of the hospital and I decided, man, I've got to go on a personal professional development journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I started reading books and I told you I followed Dave Ramsey and I kept hearing him talk about his friend Dan Miller, author of the book 48 Days to the Work You Love. And so his book transformed my life. He ended up becoming a client of mine and a friend and a mentor. And then all of a sudden I hear him talk about this book called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. By this time, Pat Flynn has hired me to help him overcome some limiting beliefs about his voice behind a microphone, if you can believe that.
Mm.
So Pat and I are having the 6 weeks of coaching one-on-one together, and we're nearing the end of our last coaching session. Mm-hmm. He successfully launched his podcast. And then I told him, I said, hey, Pat, have you read the book Think and Grow Rich? Because Cliff, I'm reading that right now. Dude, I just finished the mastermind principle chapter. He's like, yeah, dude. I said, have you heard of mastermind groups? He goes, yeah, there's a bunch of groups that I'm aware of and they cost $100,000 a year, blah, blah, blah. I haven't been a part of one. I said, would you like to start a mastermind group? He goes, yeah. And so in October of 2010, Pat Flynn and I launched a mastermind group together. Pat Flynn and I have met every single week, 50 weeks out of the year since then.
Wow.
And there are four other people who are in that group. One is Michael Stelzner, owner of Social Media Marketing World. Ray Edwards, who is a world-renowned copywriter. Mark Mason, who is a senior leader at Texas Instruments. There is Leslie Samuel. Did I get all the guys? Anyway, but we've met every single week. And what I can tell you, it's being so. And what was different about this mastermind group that I'm telling you about now, what was different from that group of 10 people, then 9, that was a part of the Google group, everything in my life changed when I was in a mastermind group with people who also ran online businesses.
Mm.
See, all of those other people, they were business-minded, but they were professionals. One was a CEO of a company. He did not own the company. He was the CEO of a company. The other people had been business people in businesses, but they weren't owners. Mm. They didn't have to face the same kind of decisions that a business owner faces. But boy, when Pat and I built this group, we're both facing these kind of decisions. And then we brought other people who are facing the kind of decisions and at the same level of life and business that we were at the time. And we just all just poured into each other. And since then, mastermind groups have revolutionized how everything that I do. So I first and foremost talk to my wife about what's going on. But every other decision that I have in my life, I go to my Green Room Mastermind. And I say, this is what I've got going on. And the Bible, I still have so much respect for so many things. And one of the things it says is plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed.
Mm.
And it's not that I follow the advice of all of the people that I seek advice from, but wow, the questions they help me ask are questions that I hadn't thought to ask, because in my mind, everything just looks perfect. And they're like, huh, have you thought about this? I'm like, I haven't thought about that.
Mm.
I'm still going to go for it, but man, I haven't prepared for that. So I'm going to make preparations for that potentiality.
Mm-hmm.
And Napoleon Hill says you can accomplish more in a single year than you can in a lifetime on your own with the aid of a mastermind group. And what has happened in my business, if anybody goes to cliffravenscraft.com/bio and just read my story, my wife is the initiator of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I attribute all of my success, a majority of it, to the fact that I've been aided by the mastermind principle every single week, 50 weeks out of the year since 2010.
Wow. Yeah. A lot of power and wisdom too, right?
I think
something to be said about when you get people, like-minded people together, and how you can co-create. And yeah, the wisdom piece is definitely powerful, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, there's just something powerful when a group of people together come together in the spirit of perfect harmony, where every person in the group is committed to the success of every person in the group.
Yeah, and that's very rare too, right? So can you speak to what makes this experience so unique?
What makes it unique is the intentionality behind it. And we, by the way, we all have mastermind groups. Furkan, you are in a mastermind relationship with your wife. So it's a mastermind group is a small group, two or more, who are gathered together in a spirit of, and they've agreed to work together in a spirit of perfect harmony towards desired outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a mastermind group with your wife. I'm in a mastermind group with my wife. I was in a mastermind relationship with 10 people in a Google group until one of them was no longer willing to be in a spirit of perfect harmony.
Yes.
And then, but anyway, so what makes this possible is the understanding of what the mastermind principle is, and the fact that it's not a bunch of people who agree with you. And I don't want anybody to think, gosh, that one person disagreed with you, and that person didn't disagree with me. That person says, Cliff, you're a failure and you need to go back to your dad and get a job. There's a difference.
Yes. Yeah.
that person had lost his ability to speak into my life because he absolutely told me I was a failure.
Mm.
That is not a spirit of harmony. How he could have remained in the group, he could have said, Cliff, I got to tell you something. I think you're amazing. My own personal beliefs do not feel like this is a responsible thing to do. So I don't feel like I could encourage you to go do that.
Mm.
I personally feel that if things are this bad, you might want to consider going back to the insurance office, but let's see what the other guys have to say.
Mm.
If he would have said that, he would have still remained in the group.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to point out that this idea that you're in a spirit of perfect harmony doesn't mean that you surround yourself with a bunch of yes people.
No, Yeah. Yeah. I think there's what I've learned is people project their own fear onto others, right? And
yes,
we tend to internalize that sometimes, but we don't have to. And I think that was the follow-up that you received, that don't internalize this person's fear in yourself and trust you're on the right path.
Think about this though. What if I did not have, and again, remember, I didn't have the language. I didn't call it my mastermind group, but that group was a mastermind group. Mm-hmm. There's everything I know about master, and I know a lot about mastermind groups today, but I'm going to tell you right now, imagine if I did not have that mastermind group, that Google group to send, hey, I'm experienced this challenge. It's been recommended that this could put some food on the table. Mm. What do you guys think? Imagine if I only sent that and the only person I talked to was this one friend who then said that, dude, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation today. Mm-hmm. I would not have reached the millions of people I've reached in the last 20 years if I did not have that mastermind group. That's how vital mastermind groups are to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really powerful takeaway for people who are seeking to grow and surround themselves with like-minded people. And I think there's so many takeaways from everything you've shared, including the fact that you have to know what your path is and look for the messages around you to recognize that whether or not you're on that path. And it does come with difficulty. It's never going to be easy, but even being able to reframe those challenges at times based on past experiences. So many nuggets. Cliff, thank you so much for sharing your story and everything you've gone through to be where you are today and the work you continue to do and serve, how you serve other people as well. Now, you shared little tidbits along the way, but what are some ways people can find your work online if they wanted to listen to your podcast episodes or just learn more about you?
Thank you so much for that, Erkan. So the first thing, I would encourage you to check out podcastanswerman.com/493. Listen to that episode. My wife deserves a ton of credit. And so it's a powerful conversation and it would be a great introduction to the content that I create. Beyond that, I would encourage you to then go over to upgradeyourpeergroup.com. Upgrade Your Peer Group is a podcast. It's a short series podcast. There's only 6 episodes. Start with episode 1 and listen all the way through to the end of episode 6. If you are not already in an intentional mastermind group experience, this podcast is essentially what I would write in a book if I decided to put a book together on mastermind groups. It is probably the most valuable advice I could ever give you, the most valuable wisdom. It's how you can go and find your mastermind group members, the pitfalls to avoid, all of it.
Yes.
Everything that I know that could be of value for you to have a great mastermind group experience is in that podcast. It's called Upgrade Your Peer Group, The Power of Mastermind Groups at upgradeyourpeergroup.com. From there, I'm very easy to find and follow.
Awesome. Thank you again, Cliff. I really appreciate your time today and the opportunity to talk to you again. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I'm glad you have a podcast called Easy Conversations, not Really Difficult, Challenging Conversations. It's been so much fun. And by the way, if anybody wants to email me personally, I love to hear from people. My email address is real simple, cliff@cliffravenscraft.com. And Furkan, thank you for this opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you for checking out this episode with Cliff. As always, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. And on Apple and Spotify, you can leave up to a 5-star review. Please check out the sponsors in the description, as well as the Easy Reflections newsletter, a zero-cost newsletter that goes out weekly, where I explore different mental health topics and provide practical tips and insights for the reader that they can implement. You can find the link to the newsletter in the show note captions as well, where you can subscribe directly. Thank you again, and until next week.